Support for WVIK comes from Kathleen Collins at the Dragonfly in Bettendorf, using both conventional and alternative counseling methods for empowerment to help create change for individuals and couples. More information is at KathleenCollinsCounseling.com.
The station is now one of the last remaining areas of collaboration between Russia and the West. I'm Nora Rahm, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Jarl and Pamela Mohn, focusing on civil liberties, foster youth, public radio, and the arts. And the Public Welfare Foundation, committed to advancing transformative youth and criminal justice reforms.
Well, it is a lovely morning here on the Augustana College campus, and you're just in time for a conversation with this week's guest, Max Roach from Rivermont Collegiate. I'm Kai Swanson. I hope you'll join us here on Quad Cities Public Radio as we while away the hour, check in on the composer's date book, and maybe get you to make a pledge at WVIK.org. It's all ahead on Saturday Morning Live, portions recorded. Well, Max Roach, here it is, a beautiful, beautiful morning, and what do? But you come indoors. I don't know, that might be a sign of poor judgment, but I'm glad you're here with me, Max.
I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, Max is the headmaster at Rivermont Collegiate, an august institution that's been part of our community for decades. We'll find out more about all those details in just a little bit, but for starters, I'm just grateful to have you with us because
thank you.
I don't know enough about you, but every time I learn something new, I'm even more intrigued. So I'm looking forward to learning more about you.
All right. You as well, Kai. Thanks. I'm a jack of all trades, that's for sure.
Well, and I like that moniker myself, too. And during the course of our time together, we're going to be gently reminding people that it's important to keep supporting local programming. Most radio stations now are based out of a windowless office building in Orlando, Florida, or something like that. And then they just transmit everywhere, but not here at WVIK. We like to have the local angle. And Max, you're helping to personify that. But let's talk about how you got to our great community.
I am an import.
I know that, but tell us about that journey from where you started to how you got here.
Sure. Well, so my story is quite an interesting one. I was born at Stanford Hospital in the Bay Area.
Yeah.
And my father was a United Airlines captain.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yep. And so he was a gearhead. He loved motorcycles. He loved sports cars. He had Mustangs. He had a Ferrari Berlinetta.
Ooh.
Oh, my God. I wish I still had that.
Ooh.
And so he was a really interesting fella, very well loved and liked. And unfortunately, he was shot and killed when I was 3.
My goodness.
Yeah.
Yeah. My goodness.
So, of course, that changed the course of my life, right?
Yeah.
And my mom moved up to Incline Village, Nevada. They were building a house there, which is kind of up the Sierra Nevadas from the Bay Area, just to start over, mostly, you know? And I had my father's best friend, childhood friend, was they had grown up together in Japan, and his best friend was living in Guam at the time. He quit his job in Guam, he was a pilot also, and moved to Lake Tahoe to help raise me as a father figure.
My goodness.
Yes. Yeah.
What a great story.
It was
goodness.
It's really a fascinating story. Yeah.
Well, I
grew up in Lake Tahoe.
Yeah. A best friend, and they were both pilots. That's really wild.
Yes.
Wow.
They grew up in Tokyo after the war.
Uh-huh.
Imagine being a young, American, a 14, 15, 16-year-old kid running roughshod over all of Tokyo.
So maybe their parents were military? Or?
Yes. Yeah, my grandfather was military and then became a Japan Airlines pilot.
Actually. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And then Rick, my father's best friend, his dad was in, I think it was furniture and shipping. Yeah.
Wow.
So, you know, some wealthy kids living in Roppongi, which is a very swanky neighborhood in Tokyo now, if, you know, every square inch of dirt is worth millions.
I bet, yeah.
But and so stories of their misdeeds filled my childhood. Yeah.
Well, and
yeah.
So what a great gift to have this Rick as someone who could be a sort of a translator for your father's experiences to you. Now, I imagine that might have had something to do with you have quite a connection yourself with Japan.
I do, yes.
How did that get started and how does it manifest itself today?
Well, I think it got started with my father's growing up there.
Yeah.
And my grandfather, you know, worked in Japan for, I think, nearly 20 or 30 years. So my dad was there from maybe age 7 to 18, I think, and then he went away to college and flight school and all of that. And so, you know, even though my father wasn't around, I grew up hearing Japanese and hearing a lot of stories of wild times, you know, stealing cars and driving them through outdoor markets in Tokyo and just craziness that you could imagine, you know, two wealthy American kids in 1953 or something, right? Yeah. So that it started there. And then, like a lot of kids in the 70s and 80s, I was a huge fan of Bruce Lee, and martial arts movies kind of hit their pinnacle, I think, in the 80s, right? Some really cheesy, bad ones. But I loved them all, and I started doing judo. And then taekwondo, I fought competitively a little bit. I was never really much good, but I sure had fun doing it. And then I, you know, just being interested in Japan in general, got into Japanese history and culture. Then I found classical Japanese martial arts. So judo is a modern martial art, right? It's a sport played for points. Then I found classical Japanese martial arts. So I've been practicing Aikido and Iaido for over 30 years now.
My goodness.
Yeah.
My goodness. When was your first experience in Japan?
So I guess it was right after I graduated high school.
Okay.
My uncle Rick got me a ticket, and I was lucky. I went to a boarding school with several Japanese kids. You know, one of the things about going to a boarding school is you make friends from literally all over the world, and very often they invite you to come home with them for breaks. And so after graduation, I went and spent just about a month in Japan. Traveled up and down the country and had a ball stayed with various Japanese friends at their homes, and we went whitewater rafting, and we just had so much fun. All the crazy things you can only see in Tokyo, you know, vending machines for anything you can think of, and we had a ball. Yeah. So that was, I guess that would be 1996.
And then you obviously have maintained that because you still go to Japan with some regularity, right?
I do, yeah. Especially now. I try to go at least once a year, I have to go see my teachers there. So I'm fortunate to train directly with the headmaster of both of the arts that I practice. The headmaster of Aikido is in Tokyo. His nickname is Doshu, which means like head of the organization or whatever. The head of a much older style of classical Japanese swordsmanship called Musou Jikiden Eishin Ryu. It's a mouthful, sorry. He is down in central Japan. So I belong to a dojo in a little town called Inuyama, and I'm honored to train with some excellent 10th degree level, 9th and 10th degree level teachers there. I do exams directly with the 23rd generation headmaster. His title is Soke, which it's like being a headmaster at Rivermont, actually.
Right.
I'm just a temporary steward of a much larger institution.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I go and do my exams. I'll be going again this summer, being promoted to 6th Dan. look forward to it.
Well, I do want to talk a little bit about Rivermont as well. Now,
sure.
And growing up here in the Quad Cities, I knew it as St. Catherine St. Mark's.
Yes.
I had some friends who went there, and so I would assume those were at one time separate institutions that came together, and then, of course, there was the evolution. But tell us a little bit about the history of the school.
Absolutely, yes. So St. Catherine's was founded as a boarding school for girls.
Mm-hmm.
And they took some local kids too, and kind of a finishing school,
mm-hmm.
Ladies only. And it served very affluent families locally as well as from the whole region, right? So the Palmers, mm-hmm. the Von Mars, mm-hmm. you know, and so on and so forth. But, you know, it's difficult to make ends meet. And I think they were faced with a financial and programmatic identity conflict in that, you know, they had to pay their bills.
Mm.
So eventually, you know, they widened their market and they integrated a boys program. And so they couldn't just be St. Catherine's anymore. They added St. Mark's.
Mm.
So the crest was changed from the wheel of St. Catherine, which is a fascinating, bizarre torture wheel that is how she achieved sainthood, as she was mm-hmm. tortured to death by a farming implement.
Mm.
And they added the lion, which represents St. Mark.
St. Mark, right.
Yep. So now we have the wheel and the lion. And then, you know, those facilities began to age. They were up on Tremont in the Renwick Mansion.
Right. Yeah.
Yes. That's just a few blocks away from my house.
Hmm.
And, well, that's interesting too, because Renwick's partner, built my home.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah. They were both lumber barons.
Of course. Yeah, yeah. Nice connection.
Yeah. So in any case, they had the Renwick Mansion and then vast facilities back behind the mansion as well. And I believe that they had kind of outgrown and the facilities were becoming too burdensome.
Mm-hmm.
And right about that time, the Joseph Bettendorf home
mm-hmm.
Became available. And so the school relocated from Davenport to Bettendorf in the Joseph Bettendorf home. And, oh gosh, that was maybe early 70s,
mm-hmm.
I want to say,
mm-hmm.
1972,
mm-hmm.
With some minor modifications. You know, they built a gym with an underground passage out of the bottom of the mansion into the gym, which is pretty nice. And yeah, the stories are fascinating of those early days in the Joseph Bettendorf home. You know, they would take the kids through the secret tunnel.
Yeah.
Which is all, you know.
Was part of that tunnel, though, originally to a carriage house?
Yes. So there are two tunnels.
Okay.
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
Because I've been in one of those tunnels.
Have you been in the really spooky one?
I have to be very careful about details. I'm not sure what the statute of limitations are there, but I had a friend who was sort of a summertime caretaker.
Shall remain nameless.
Decades ago.
Okay.
Let's just say it's decades ago.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, but no, I didn't think it was spooky. It just looked historic.
It sure is. Yeah, it sure is. You know, we don't use it much.
Yeah.
I try to keep it clean. But it's still dusty and nasty down there.
Yeah.
They used to bring kids when it snowed. The elementary school was in the carriage house, and so they would bring them through there to get lunch in the mansion. I can't imagine bringing a class of kindergartners through that nasty,
well,
spooky tunnel.
Knowing quite a few kindergartners myself, between that and getting them all bundled up to go about 20 yards
right.
and then play in the snow the whole way,
exactly.
I see the wisdom of the tunnel.
That's true. That's true. Getting gear on and off
that's
is
right.
definitely a challenge.
That's right.
I was a first grade teacher for 6 years, so I can attest.
Yeah. Now, was that before coming here?
Oh, yes. That
okay.
was the very beginning of my career.
So tell us about your educational, professional trajectory leading to Bettendorf.
Well, I tell you what, before we do that, let me finish a little bit about the history of Rivermont.
Please.
Yeah, yeah. So so when we were at the school, to Joseph Bettendorf Mansion, they were still St. Catherine's St. Mark's.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the new facilities proved fruitful. It was smaller. It definitely kind of fit the enrollment. At the time, and things were good, and I think eventually they grew, and you know, we're coming up on our 140th birthday this
That's
fall.
That's what it is. All right, mm-hmm. fantastic.
140th birthday. And so naturally, institutions will have lean times and flush times money-wise, right? And so I believe they were coming through another lean time. They had separated away from the church, which gave mm-hmm. funding. And the church had dropped funding, I think, decades earlier. But they still remained, they retained the name. And so they were faced with an identity crisis of being thought of as a religious institution.
Right, sure.
But they hadn't been supported by the church in years. So they had to broaden their marketing horizons, broaden their brand appeal. And we still have many of the old traditions of St. Catherine's. I still give the bishop's prize every year at graduation.
Isn't that something?
Yeah, yeah. And we have all the, you know, the regalia and all the things in the mansion, and our ceremonies are still very much, we have imps and tigers. We have a house system like in Harry Potter. They have Hufflepuff and Ravenclaw. We have imps and tigers, and we still do that. We have the sorting cup where kids have to draw a token, and then that sorts them into either imps or tigers. You know, these are all... And the cup actually is engraved all the way back to 1912.
Oh, wow.
So imps and tigers go way, way, way back.
That's cool.
But, you know, eventually they had to reconcile the fact that they were no longer a religious organization. And it was harming their enrollment because people were confused about who they were. Mm-hmm. And so they went through this big, long rebranding process, and they came up with the name Rivermont Collegiate, which is, you know, that's a double-edged sword, because I'm sure some of your listeners will grind their teeth about that and think that, oh, they, you know, they killed my old school and a beautiful old school. But the truth is, we work really hard to maintain those traditions sure. and honor those traditions.
Sure. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's one of the great things that people have to remember, that oftentimes the oldest institutions in communities are schools.
Right.
And if they were doing things exactly today as they had done when they founded, they wouldn't be around. And there are plenty of examples, at least at the higher ed level, and I'm sure, too, come to think of it, in the secondary and earlier levels, where you know, things, the outside environment changed, and it required some flexibility. And the irony is, that's what we ask of our students, resilience and flexibility. But we have to show that as institutions, too. We're going to hear about an institution here in just a moment. And that is, well, from the composer's date book, we get a little insight into the life of one of the composers we know at the QCSO. More on the QCSO and Rivermont and Max Roach in just a moment. But friends, it's time for the composer's date book.
This is the composer's date book for April 6th. I'm John Burge. In 1920, a French publisher commissioned several works in memory of Claude Debussy, who died 2 years earlier. Maurice Ravel's contribution was a single movement piece for violin and cello. Ravel then expanded this music into a four-movement sonata he titled Duo, perhaps thinking of the duo for the same instruments by Hungarian composer Zoltán Kodály. And if Ravel's music at times sounds Hungarian, perhaps another reason was his meeting with Béla Bartók while working on this piece. In any case, Ravel was trying something new and different, and said so. Quote, "I believe this sonata marks a turning point in the evolution of my career. In it, thinness of texture is pushed to the extreme. Harmonic charm is renounced, coupled with an increasingly conspicuous reaction in favor of melody." Violinist Hélène Jourdan-Morange and cellist Maurice Maréchal gave the premiere of Ravel's duo at the Salle Pleyel in Paris on today's date in 1922. "It's complicated," the violinist told Ravel. "The cello has to sound like a flute and the violin like a drum. It must be fun writing such difficult stuff, but no one's going to play it except virtuosos." "Good," replied Ravel with a smile. "Then I won't be murdered by amateurs." Composer's Datebook is produced by APM, American Public Media, in collaboration with the American Composers Forum, reminding you that all music was once new.
And support for Composer's Datebook on WVIK comes from the Quad City Symphony Orchestra, where access meets inspiration. The QCSO seeks to inspire, entertain, and engage the entire Quad Cities community through music, music education, and cultural leadership. And you can learn more at qcso.org. And friends, I'm going to admonish you right now. If you don't have your tickets for this weekend's Masterworks, you better get them by heading over to qcso.org. It's going to be a great program tonight at the Adler, tomorrow at Centennial Hall in Rock Island, where we'll be hearing a lovely work by Brahms that doesn't get played too much, the Tragic Overture. We'll be hearing Tchaikovsky's Fourth Symphony Orchestra, Symphony, which is absolutely divine in so many ways. But friends, we also get a chance to hear the QCSO premiere of a work it co-commissioned of local composer Jacob Banks, someone I'm proud to call a colleague here at Augustana College. This was co-commissioned by the United States Marine Corps Band and the Philadelphia Orchestra. So, yeah, we let Philly take the lead on this one, and they got to perform it. It's gotten rave reviews in the Philadelphia press, but it's Jacob Banks' clarinet concerto with the principal clarinetist of the Philadelphia Orchestra, Ricardo Morales. And so we don't want you to miss it. In fact, if you come a little early tonight at 6:30 at our concert conversations, I think we might have Mr. Morales and also Dr. Banks joining us for the concert conversation. You're welcome regardless, friends, and we hope you'll show up. But, of course, until then, get out and enjoy the day. 47 degrees right now in the Quad Cities, 44 degrees in Dubuque. The sun is shining, and isn't that nice? My guest is Max Roach, the headmaster of Rivermont Collegiate, and I learned a new Finnish word this week, Max. Takatalvi. That's Takatalvi is when spring fakes you out. You know, we had some really nice weather there for a while, and then it just smacked us, and it was rainy and nasty and gray and windy. Right. There was a day this week, I thought, it felt colder than it's been all winter.
Yes.
And it was just that wind blowing. So Takatalvi, thank you, Finns, for telling us what.
So what was that again? What does it mean, Takatalvi?
It's when it's false spring.
False spring.
Takatalvi.
Okay.
And there's actually, in old Finnish, there's a weather god, and it's his way of how could we put it? Thumbing his nose at us. When you think you've got it figured out, Takatalvi comes in and plays the old switcheroo. So Max Roach is my guest. We were just going to talk about your career and how you got started in education.
Oh, yes. Well, you know, it's interesting because my family all thought I had a screw loose. Certainly, I was a wild kid. But beyond that, you know, my father was a United Airlines pilot. My grandfather flew for World and then Japan Airlines and Pan Am as well. My mother was a flight attendant. My uncles are all pilots. Hmm. My brother is a pilot. And then I went and became a first grade teacher. And they all, you know, they're all, what's wrong with that boy? You know, and the God's honest truth is, I didn't have any money. I was orphaned at 17, I had almost nothing. I had a little bit of money from the sale of my mom's house after we settled her medical bills. When she died, we had to settle her accounts. I had just enough to help with college, but flight school is much more expensive.
Yes, it is.
And so I needed to go to college, and I had this very adult feeling of, I need to have a job with benefits. I need health insurance and vision insurance and all that. And I thought, you know, I like school. Turns out I'm good at it. And and so I went in. I got a full ride scholarship to Westminster College in Salt Lake City. It's a fine kind of equivalent to Augustana in many ways. Went there 4 years later, came out with a degree in education, and I got a job teaching first grade in Salt Lake City. Hmm. And so that's how I got into it. And that was right about 2000. So I taught first grade for 6 years. And during those 6 years, I taught in the most affluent school in Salt Lake City, as well as the least affluent school in Salt Lake City. And when you're the low man on the totem pole in the union, you know, they can't guarantee you a job for next year until final enrollment is in. So they gave me a choice. If you want to take a risk, you can come back next year, maybe, or we can guarantee you a job at this other school.
Right.
So, you know, again, I had nothing and I needed an income. Mm-hmm. And so I took this other job and I worked at Washington Elementary School in Salt Lake City. We took all the kids from the homeless shelter. We had kids coming in the mornings who, very often, every single day, I would ask several kids, you know, have you eaten this morning?
Mm-hmm. Right,
you know,
right.
And so just tragic stories. It was wonderful work. I loved it. And I was like the kid's favorite uncle, right?
Because sure.
I'm kind of a wild man. And so I would grab them by their arms and ankles, and I'd swing them around over my head and stuff at the recess. And the other teachers were looking away, you know, terrified at what they were seeing.
Liability.
Yeah, yeah. Because I'd go out and play soccer with the kids.
And
I was young and active.
Yeah.
I could play with the kids more. And then, you know, No Child Left Behind came out.
Mm.
And that was a career-defining change for so many educators. Mm. It was a real low point in morale. So many educators were demoralized because, and I don't know if your listeners will remember, but part of that legislation included labeling teachers and even whole schools as either passing or failing, right? And that was all based on what they called annual yearly progress. So here's something interesting. The very affluent school that I was at, of course, tested at a very high level. And they were mortified at being able to meet annual yearly progress, because when you're already testing at the 97th percentile, making annual yearly progress is really difficult, right?
Hmm.
It's like losing weight. That first 10 pounds is easy, baby. It's the last, the last little bit that's harder
right,
as you go.
Right.
And so they were mortified. They had no idea what they were going to do.
Yeah.
We were told you've got to just teach these kids, and you got, boost them and more homework, and because you had a very different parent group. Whereas at Washington Elementary, the very next year, they were mortified for all the other reasons.
Mm.
We had so many students with special needs, and of every kind of special need you could think of, intellectual, physical, developmental, behavioral, cognitive.
Mm-hmm.
So they had no idea what they were going to do. And they were telling us, you have a whole group of kids who aren't going to make it.
Yeah.
Don't focus on them.
Yes.
You have a bunch of kids who are going to make it no matter what you do.
Right.
Don't focus on them.
Yeah.
Focus on the middle group and give them extra, attention and extra direct instruction and extra, calls home and whatever you need to do.
Yeah.
If we could just get that group over the line, we'll make AYP for next year.
Hmm.
Right. So that was, kind of crushed my soul in terms of, you go through college and you're a young go-getter and all bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, and you get out into the world and you realize, wow, this public education thing isn't what I thought it would be.
Hmm.
And we were lucky at Washington. We had four male elementary school teachers, which is super rare.
Yeah.
Male elementary teachers are the rainbow unicorns of education. And two of them had PhDs. One of them had a master's, and then me, greenhorn, Max. And they quit because they were told they're no longer highly qualified. That was another thing. If you were going to work with impoverished communities, you had to be highly qualified in a way that the government would approve. So what that meant is, even if you had a PhD and you've been teaching 30 years, which my colleagues had been, one was 22 years, one was 30 something years, at that school, at that same school, these guys had been there forever.
Mm.
But they didn't have, you had to have one of two degrees, a master's in reading instruction or English language, English as a second language instruction. You had to have a master's in one of those to be considered highly qualified, and you had to be highly qualified to work in a Title I school.
Yeah.
So they were so offended, they quit.
Well, I want to shift gears a little bit, and I want to talk about a deeper level of educational thinking, maybe, or should I say a higher altitude level.
Okay.
That is that, you know, in the way our country has grown up, and it has had lots of fits and starts in terms of educational policy.
Of course.
There have been success stories, and there have been setbacks and everything in between. One thing that has been a constant is, I think, best given voice by an amazing educational leader, Beverly Daniel Tatum, when she was president of Spelman College in Atlanta, a school that I actually had a chance to visit and work at a conference there and speak at. It's an amazing institution. If you ever get to Atlanta, to go check it out. But what she talked about, the way she described it, is that, I'll just read what she said. She said, a lack of direct experience coming up in our own households often means that one learns about the other, if you will, capital O, other. Mm-hmm. What we learn is based on secondhand information, information that might be conveyed by media stereotypes or long-held multi-generational parental prejudices. And as a result, schools of all the institutions in our country, in our democracy, have some of the greatest responsibility to challenge misconceptions and explore differences and to help our students develop their capacity to connect across them. And so that's why I am grateful that there is a great diversity of educational institutions. You've got private institutions like Rivermont, public institutions scattered around the Quad Cities, and it takes that mix. But I get concerned, and Rivermont does a great job because you have brought people from around the world and opening up the boarding program and exposing them to our community and to kids here. What worries me, though, is the schools that don't want to not only acknowledge difference, but don't want to exploit the learning outcomes that come from dealing with difference. So talk to me a little bit about your thoughts on difference in the lens of education.
Wow, what a wonderful and broad topic. The question really is, where do we want to begin and at which direction do we want to run with the concept of difference? I would start by saying we need to celebrate differences, and that goes at the micro and macro level, right? If we want to engage in our world in the most productive way, then we will do so by embracing and celebrating difference. If we fail to embrace, if we fail to celebrate, then we're essentially limiting our potential. Whether it's a path forward in a career or in just your mindset, right? So differences and celebrating differences and being okay with other people having other things and maybe even more than okay.
Yeah.
Like thinking that's pretty cool that I've got a friend who I don't agree with at all politically. Boy, they're wonderful people.
Well, I mean, I think that's one of the things that we learned about diversity 20, 25, 30 years ago is that people would initially the conversation was, can you tolerate diversity, right? And then people would say, you know, can you begin to embrace it? I really do think, especially through the lens of education, that you profit from it. Right.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And so it's not just simply toleration. It's like you have to, and then if that's the case, if you're going to profit from diversity in workplaces, in communities, in schools, colleges, universities, then you have to be mindful of the things that help people succeed so that they're not doing things exactly the way they did in 1880. 1860,
right?
1960. That you're moving forward, and so tell us a little bit about maybe that role in creating the boarding program at Rivermont.
Sure. Yeah. Absolutely. So when I took this job, I was I'd never thought in a million years that I would move to the flyover country. Let alone find domestic and employment bliss. And I've got to tell you, Kai, I love it here. I love the Quad Cities. I've been so delightfully surprised. But the reason I took the job is I saw huge potential in Rivermont Collegiate. And I thought to myself, why is this amazing school under you know, under-enrolled. And we needed to make some changes in order to stay fresh. And we needed to ask ourselves, you know, are we making the right promises and are we keeping those promises? Mm-hmm. And what is our value proposition? And how does that relate to other amazing schools in the area? Mm-hmm. You know, Rocky? Amazing. You can get an amazing education at Rocky or West.
I've said so a time or two myself, you know.
I am a listener, so I happen to know that. So, you know, you can get an amazing education at any school, and you can get a terrible education at the best schools.
Sure,
right?
Sure.
But what I saw when I looked at Rivermont was a really unique opportunity because my background is in boarding schools in international boarding schools in particular. So I ran a program about 500 students in my high school division at Darlington School. Mm. And we had students, about 230 residential students from over 50 countries. And then I worked at another boarding school before that. And I attended another international boarding school as we talked about my trip to Japan.
Yeah.
You know, looking around here, there's not a lot of authentic diversity in the Midwest. It's pretty limited. And I think there's a real difference in diversity between being a third generation, you know, person from India or whatever, and having someone who lives in India and can take you home with them.
Sure. And we see that all the time, you know, at Augustana,
in terms
of growing that enrollment. When did the boarding program start?
So we started about, we're in our fifth year now.
Fifth year. Mm-hmm. And you got students from all over the place,
we
right?
do. Oh, yeah. Democratic Republic of Congo, Morocco, Turkey, Serbia, Ukraine. Mm-hmm. That was an interesting one.
I bet.
And China, Japan, Vietnam, Thailand.
Yeah.
They come from all over the world and they come to the Quad Cities.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, you know, here's the thing. When I go around selling my school and recruiting kids, it's clean, it's safe, it's friendly.
Sure.
And we're ranked among the top 7% of all schools, public and private, in the nation. Hmm. And it's clean, safe, and friendly.
Yeah.
And what more could a parent
and,
want?
Yeah, and, you know, right? I often think, and it's great that these folks come here and see our community through those lenses, because one of our challenges is the people who've lived here their whole lives, like me, are too prone to not have that comparison set and realize just how deep and rich the assets of this community really are. And one of those is, and I sound like a broken record, but I got so excited this week, Max, when the Quad City Symphony Orchestra announced next year's season. And Maestro Mark Russell Smith held forth and told about all kinds of things. And one of the most exciting for me is that as we're talking about difference and what happens when people from different backgrounds come together, this year is the 100th anniversary of Rhapsody in Blue by George Gershwin, which is where he took American music and presented it in such a way that it took the world of serious music by storm. And it was performed all over Europe in those years in the 20s. And to celebrate this season, the coming season, we're going to hear Rhapsody in Blue. And I'm sorry, you're not going to hear the whole thing here, but I found a delightful abbreviated piano version by a wonderful artist named Ricky Keys, ironically, the name of a good friend of mine from high school here in Rock Island, but he took a career in the law as Madison Keys' father, by the way. But this
Ricky
is
Keys is Madison Keys.
No, you bet, you bet.
Oh,
and so Ricky Keys, the pianist, is going to here present for us an abbreviated short piano version of Gershwin's Rhapsody in Blue. And friends, I hope you enjoy it. Happy Birthday Rhapsody in Blue. And thank you, Quad City Symphony Orchestra, for making sure that's part of your next, the 110th performance season of the Quad City Symphony Orchestra. And thanks to my guest, Max Roach, headmaster of Rivermont Collegiate. We, friends, are talking about difference and the importance of difference. And one thing that's always moved me is in the chambers of the Illinois State Supreme Court, and it's a long roundabout story as to how I found myself there on a tour taking some students to see what that courtroom looks like. They have inscribed over the door. So the audience doesn't see it, but the judges look at it every day, inscribed above that door, Audi alterem partem, which is Latin for listen to the other side.
Oh,
right. And you can
put a nice reminder.
You can put a legal projection on that. But I think from an it's just in a democracy, which is you're in education. I'm in education. Education's role in a democracy is to create informed and engaged, purposeful citizens.
That's
right.
That's right.
So we can't do that if we're not teaching our young people to listen to the other side.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, I often talk about how having a global community at a boarding school, at a day and boarding school, provides a really unique opportunity because the world is increasingly interconnected and interdependent, right?
Mm-hmm.
Economies, trade, all of that. And in the age of technology and communication, now more than ever, you know, we're not working with people. We're competing with competing against them.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we're working with them.
Yeah.
And the ability to do that and to reach across cultures and reach across great distances and work productively and collaboratively, celebrating difference.
Right.
Since that's our theme today, it's really powerful.
And
you know, we need to prepare our children to be global citizens. We just must do it.
And I think for people like you and I, our age demographic, it's important for us to remember that is we have to guide that in our lives every single day.
Yes.
Because we live in a society that is set up to reinforce our biases. On a daily basis,
right?
It's so easy.
Social media is
social
not helping.
Social media, right. Exactly. Yeah. All these different things. It is so easy to have our biases reinforced, much to our great comfort. And the purpose of education is, at one level at least, it is to promote lifelong comfort with discomfort, with understanding that we don't get it all. The minute we settle ourselves into certainty, we have really put ourselves behind the eight ball.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think the endeavor that you're engaged in at Rivermont is a great exercise in getting people to realize difference isn't just something we accommodate, like with diversity before.
Exactly.
It's something that we have to learn to profit from.
Right. Absolutely. You know, I'm reminded of, so many of our older kids, middle school and high school, will go and volunteer in our elementary classrooms.
Oh, nice.
So it's really a unique spot because we're a one-stop shop.
Yep.
If you've got an elementary kid and a high school kid, drop them off at the same school, and they're going to see each other on their way to music or on their way to Latin or whatever class, you know, they're headed to. And you see these big kids giving high fives and hugs to these little kids.
Yeah.
And it's not just their big brother from Rock Island or Moline. It's a little girl who's in eighth grade, who's one of our boarding students from Japan.
Hmm.
And she's given high fives to fifth graders who think it's so cool that she's from Japan because they love anime.
Oh,
Or whatever, right? But just that comfort, that familiarity, that celebration. Next week is our international week. So we'll have a whole week of international presentations, and our students will be telling each other about where they're from and what makes their countries unique and special. And then, the grand finale is a food festival. And so it's a big time over at Rivermont.
Oh, that sounds great. Yeah. But I mean, it's also important for the rest of us to engage in and embrace these differences and opportunities whenever we can. And I just am thinking that in the next few weeks, thanks to Quad City Arts, and you can find out more at quadcityarts.org. They're bringing in a Palestinian-American musician who is going to be a guest in our community and presenting music that many of us are not used to hearing, right? And then a couple of weeks after that, there is a Japanese storyteller.
Oh, wonderful.
Yamamoto Kuniko, who's coming here and going to do some exposition. And who knows? Hopefully we'll get them both on the show here at some point.
Yeah, but I want more information so I can take my students.
And if I want more information on Rivermont, where do I go on the web to get that?
So we're at rivermontcollegiate.org.
Right.
And yeah, take a look at our website.
Sure.
We just gave it an overhaul, and it looks really sharp. Like WVIK, we're engaged in a capital campaign, and we're always looking for support. And while I'm talking about that, I want you to know I had to cancel my credit card, and so my funding, I'm a regular supporter of WVIK, and before I came on the show, I called my wife, Alethea, who's the best person in my life, and I said, honey, we got to re-up our because I know you guys are
well, absolutely. A fun drive too. And thank you for that perfect segue. Well, WVIK is, I think, more or less always in a capital campaign, but only a couple times a year do we do a member campaign. And I want to thank Max Roach, my guest, for reminding us that that's where we are right now. So, friends, if you like having an outlet like this where you can learn things about some really interesting people and organizations right here in River City, through the auspices of Saturday Morning Live portions recorded, then would you please take a moment right now, because we're coming up to the top of the hour, head over to WVIK.org and make a pledge. When you do, it's automatically matched today, Saturday, by our Challenger Circle. And guess what? If it's a $120 gift, a sustaining gift maybe of just $10 a month, you're going to get a really snazzy, wonderful WVIK picnic blanket that you can take to the Riverfront Pops concert. You can take wherever you want to go in the Quad Cities, because heaven knows when summer does finally settle in, there's so much to do outside. So thank you, Max, for reminding us that that is coming up. And friends, we need to hear from you during this fun drive. And because, you know, it's I'll tell you, Max, this has been an interesting year. It's been now about coming up on a year and a half since Don asked me to take things over here. And we're trying some different things. And one of them is to get voices here on Saturday Morning Live that have never been on the show, so we can learn more about it. Because, again, I aver, there's so much richness in this community, and it's easy to be a lifer like me and lose sight of that. So we need to have these reminders that we've got great things like Rivermont, we've got Quad City Arts, we've got Quad City Symphony Orchestra, and the list just goes on and on. And I've, you know, to tell you the truth, I learned about most of those by being a member of WVIK.
Yeah, the Figgy, the Adler, the list goes on and on.
Oh.
This community is so so blessed to have such a wide variety of culture and art.
Well, and I'm grateful to you for telling us a little bit about Rivermont, but I want to get now away from Rivermont for a second. I want to just talk to you, Max Roach. What I know you talked about this wonderful connection you have with ancient martial arts, but when you've got some free time in the Quad Cities, what are some of the things you like to do around here?
Well, you know, I'm rather a boring person.
I don't think so, buddy.
I wake up in the morning and I drink coffee and I go to work and give high fives and support teachers all day. And I'm lucky as can be. I've got four sons.
They
take a lot of my time.
What are their ages?
So 20 down to 8.
Wow, so that's a good mix.
We kept trying for a girl. I tell you what, we thought our first was going to be a girl. Her name was supposed to be Ada. So Aiden is 20 now.
Yeah.
And Aiden is getting his lineman's certificate at the Northwest Iowa Community College lineman program.
Oh, wow.
It's the best in the country, if you didn't know.
And that is a great career.
Oh,
I've known some people who have made their careers as linemen, and what an amazing career.
He is my retirement plan.
There you go.
Yep.
I like it. I like the way you think.
So, yeah, I love the Quad Cities, though. You know, we love to go down to the Adler. We've seen some fantastic shows. Charlie Behrens was a comedian there just
recently. Yes. Oh, I wanted to see him.
He was brilliant.
I couldn't. Yeah.
And the Book of Mormon. You know, I lived in Utah for a long time, but I'm not Mormon.
Yeah.
I'm not LDS, although I have so many friends who are.
Yeah.
But the Book of Mormon is just a fantastic, funny play. So much inside humor if you've ever lived in Utah. Anyway, so I like the arts. You know, we go to the museums, but we're also adventurers. So I like to ride motorcycles. I like to fix up old motorcycles. In fact, my students and I are completely rebuilding the engine of the motorcycle my father bought the year I was born.
And you, wow, and, what is that?
It's a 1976 Honda CB750. Whoa. It was the original superbike. It was hot stuff back in its day because it had disc brakes on the front and the rear. It's, by today's standards, it's slow and heavy.
Sure, sure.
It's a cool old
bike. But man, was that boss.
Absolutely.
Back in the day.
Yeah, yeah. So yesterday we took the engine out of the frame and we got it up and took the valve cover off. And I think all the kids had a moment of terror, you know, when they see all those little moving parts. I've been telling them how engines work, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And so now we're doing it. And we're having a ball.
Oh, what a riot.
I love to get out and hike. I like to mountain bike. I like to go down to the village. So we just live up at the top of the hill on the dangerous
Have
side of the village.
Have you hit the biking trails at Dorrance Park in Rock Island County?
Dorrance.
So no, we've been a tremendous partner at Alinawek, maybe?
Alinawek, yep.
We have this great partnership between the Rock Island County Forest Preserve Commission and FORC, Friends of Off-Road Cycling, which is an outstanding local organization.
I've seen some of their signage.
And they helped us to create a paradigm there at Alinawek and at Dorrance, where we can very safely and fruitfully have both hikers and bikers, and their I tell you what, at both parks, you get an appreciation for our topography, well as at Loud Thunder. There's a lot of elevation gain when you're on those trails.
So what's
out there.
I've got my pen out. What's the name of it again?
Dorrance. Dorrance. You can learn about all of these things.
Kind of mountain biking trails?
Oh, yeah. Okay. You can learn about all this at the Rock Island County Forest Preserve District website, which...
Great.
You know, creatively enough, is ricfpd.org. So just the initials plus O-R-G. So I'm glad we made that connection for you.
Yes, yes.
But can you believe it? We are out of time.
I cannot believe it.
And this is what happens.
We're just getting started.
A wonderful guest and a wonderful conversation. And my guest, by the way, has been Max Roach, the headmaster of Rivermont Collegiate in Bettendorf, an amazing institution that brings the world right here to River City. And Max, I can't thank you enough for spending an hour on a Saturday morning.
Thank you so much for having me. And I'm honored to support you and WVIK.
Well, thanks. And thanks in advance for that pledge that's going to be popping through here. I don't get to see them, you know, on a Saturday morning. But and friends, if you have not yet made your pledge, but if having a program like this that originates from our community and shines a spotlight on our community, if that's something that's important to you, I think you recognize there ain't a lot of that happening anymore. And so we need to hear from you right now. Please go over to www.wvik.org and let us know that that is something that is important to you. Quick check of our listening area forecast. Sunny skies today. The high is not quite going to make it to 60, but sit tight. It's coming. For Sunday, rain's going to start overnight and take us pretty much through the day. There's a chance for some thunderstorms, especially after 4 o'clock. Then Monday, sunny skies with a high right near 70 degrees. And then as we move forward through the week, we can anticipate temperatures again staying in the 60s, mostly sunny one day, partly cloudy. Yeah, there's a chance of rain on Wednesday, but then it clears out, and by Friday, sunny skies with a high near 62 degrees. Now, friends, we want you to stay close because Wait, Don't Tell Me is coming up next on WVIK Rock Island.
Wait, Don't Tell Me.